This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey, everybody. I'm HF Mason. I'm a general surgeon and chief medical officer at Baptist Memorial Hospital DeSoto and chief quality officer for the Baptist system.
And hi, everyone. I'm Jake Lancaster, and I'm an internal medicine physician and the chief medical information officer for the Baptist system.
Well, today we are so excited. We have two guests today, two individuals that have become recent friends of mine, and they're from an organization known as Stoked. And these two individuals is Joshua Ruff and Marcus Hollinger. And what we're going to talk about today, after they tell us a little bit about themselves, is we're going to talk about something called that they call idea science. And they do a lot of work at the D School in Stanford. But for right now, Marcus and Joshua, would you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'd love to start by, I'm Josh, and I want to start by introducing Marcus. Marcus, my collaborator, works with me at Stoked. We would say we're a breakout innovation firm based in Nashville, but Marcus comes to us from Atlanta. Before joining Stoked, Marcus worked at Reach Records, a label based in Atlanta, where he was the chief marketing officer. Recently, he led the creative for an album that just won 2 Grammys. And so we're giving lots of pats on the back and love to Marcus. When he wasn't running a record label, he and a partner were co-founding Portrait Coffee, which is also based in Atlanta. And recently won Best Coffee in Georgia in Food and Wine magazine. But Marcus, I love getting the opportunity to collaborate with you, and in particular, bringing a fearlessness to exploring something that might be new, novel, maybe a little scary too. But it's great to introduce Marcus.
Thank you so much, Josh, and thank you so much, Drs. Mason, Lancaster, and Skip. For having us on. So I had the pleasure of introducing Josh. Josh comes with a world of experience in innovation and design. So he has spent a decade at Hyatt, where he led innovation programs for the hospitality group. And he has about the same amount of time spent at the Stanford D School, leading executive education boot camps. Josh has been a part of leading innovation work that has brought products to market from product space of some of our larger manufacturing clients. So pats on the back to Josh there, a couple of things going into the market last week. And he brings a world of experience from architecture. So he is scaffolding and rebuilding the interior of his home with his bare hands. So Josh, it's a pleasure to be here with you to talk about some of the work we've been doing.
Well, Marcus and Josh, once again, thank you very much for being here. And just as a little aside, when Skip and I were young, high school, maybe college, I don't think the word stoked even existed. So, you know, that's a fairly new word. But anyway, once again, thank you for being here. And today, you know, in addition to innovation, we want to talk a little bit about idea science. And, you know, we've had Jeremy Utley on the podcast. I know you guys have worked with him, and we talked a lot about idea flow in his book, and which was really great. But talk to us a little bit about what do you mean by idea science?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Dr. Mason. Idea science solves this challenge of how do we make idea generation, creative exploration, accessible to teams that we work with. And in a lot of creative spaces and design spaces, lingo gets thrown around, and there's a lot of assumptions baked into the way that we work. We think if we're doing creative work, the best way to generate ideas is in the form of a group brainstorm. And what we've learned is when engaging with leaders at organizations and their team members, when we ask them, where did their novel breakthrough ideas come from? Very rarely does an individual say, oh, it was from my team brainstorm that I conducted, that was a meeting on the calendar. And so we've been exploring ways to bring some methods that may feel counterintuitive or challenge how we think of brainstorming to light with a unique recipe to help extract take some of the lingo out of design and bring an approach that helps teams find breakthrough and do it in a way that we can connect with folks where they're at.
Yeah, let's dive into that a little bit more about, you know, where do ideas come from, and how do you make that more of a science? I mean, most of the time we think about, you know, the light bulb moment or, you know, the apple falling on Newton's head, generating an idea where it's just kind of out of the blue and not formulaically identified. So talk to us about where do ideas come from?
Absolutely. To follow up on the metaphor that you use there, sort of the we study the blue that we tend to think that ideas come out of. So another way of saying that, we start with popular musicians, kind of, you know, creating a place for folks to have an access or an entry point. And we look at some of their creative, some of their pinnacle creative achievements, and we unpack some of the science behind those achievements. For instance, we look at Willie Nelson, and we know from some of the stories of his creation that he wrote three of his best songs with 105 degree fever. And so we look at that and say, okay, well, what is going on in the brain when someone is running 105 degree fever? And so from the science, we know that at that state, the mind is in more of a febrile, lucid state. And we ask ourselves, okay, well, how can we arrive there? Sort of that's what the science is telling us, that theta is happening in the brain and it's easier to be lucid. How do we get folks there without getting them sick? And so what we have found is that something as simple as a guided meditation can unlock those same frequencies. And then we expose teams to, or we invite teams to take a business challenge that they are working to actively solve. And we guide, one of the things we do is we guide them through that process and allow them to experience that same mindset that Willie Nelson had when he wrote his best three songs. So that's an example of how we bring this to life.
Go ahead, Jake.
Well, when you're talking about, you know, Willie Nelson and that, you know, I started thinking, a lot of the best ideas that I have had come when I'm, you know, daydreaming or I'm doing, and what I'm trying to say is, it's very hard to get bored nowadays with everything we have. You know, I drive to work and I'm listening to a book or a podcast as opposed to listening to music, but I tend to have the best ideas when I'm listening to music, or maybe I'm in the shower, or maybe it's right before I fall asleep, when I don't necessarily have those, you know, the rush of information coming at me or something that's, you know, keeping my mind active, so to speak. So is there anything in that as to why ideas come from those states?
Yeah. This example that you shared, Dr. Lancaster, we often will ask the executives we work with, tell us about the last time you had a novel idea, and they will describe being in the car, maybe listening to a podcast or reading a book, and it kind of dawns on them in this state. So diving into this theta brainwave state a little bit further that Mr. Willie Nelson experienced, there are a few different protocols that people are using these days to practice meditation. One's called yoga nidra, another's non-sleep deep rest. Whatever method that you're using, the one thing that they have in common is a stillness practice. The discipline of turning the volume down on whatever channels we're being inundated with and intentionally choosing stillness. What has been measured in embracing stillness practice is One, a targeted release of dopamine to a specific area of your brain that's synonymous to divergent thinking. The next is it actually increases your ability to access memories. One misnomer of idea generation is that we come up with ideas from scratch, where really it is a novel connection of existing memories that we have. The third is that in practicing this state of stillness, we have heightened visualization, or imagery. And so diving into a state of theta brainwave activity, we tend to forget about our body. We're not sleeping. We're not quite to that level, but we forget about our body and we have this heightened inward activity where we're able to draw unexpected connections and explore some fantastical thinking. And so just practicing the discipline of stillness is quite a unconventional way to think about brainstorming, but giving leaders permission to push pause and explore what stillness means for them has had some pretty amazing effects when we think about the teams we work with.
I was wondering is, you know, when you teach people to use these methods, does it not only, let's say, okay, we're going to have a, not a brainstorming session, but we're going to, you know, try to come up with some ideas and you go through these steps and processes and methods. Does it not only help you then, but does it just make you more apt to have better ideas throughout the day? Just curious.
Yes. Oftentimes we think of brainstorming as an event. Let's generate ideas together in this moment. But what we're trying to practice is an openness to allow things that we see as to serve as stimuli to help us say, how does that apply to this challenge that I'm setting out to explore so that we can catch ideas as they come throughout the day. One way we think about this is analogous exploration and saying, maybe I'm watching a basketball game, but there's something about the shot clock or the ref's interaction that I can glean as inspiration to apply to a challenge on my plate. And so starting with an openness and almost a surrender to putting your setting your analytical filter aside and being open to what can come to me is a byproduct of intentionally setting out this type of exploration.
Yeah. You know, when I think about the brainstorming sessions and they kind of get a bad rap, but you know, we put people together in that room for that exercise because there is a particular problem we're trying to solve, and we want people to think of ideas on how to do it. Whereas some of the you know, best ideas come maybe when there's not really even an identified problem or one that's staring you in the face that you have to give an answer to soon. But you learn, I don't know, you come up with an idea that will satisfy a problem that you didn't even know was that relevant to you. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does. Yeah, go ahead, Marcus.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, absolutely. I mean, and that's one of the things that we try to tap into. So usually our sessions will start by sort of giving participants the opportunity to either think about what's at the top of their desk. We'll kind of serve up some scaffolding for folks to filter their problems through. And if it's not something right away on the desk, they're able to use the same scaffolding to get the practice in. Much of what's sort of underpinning this work is creating exposure to mindset shifts and practices that are a little counterintuitive. And to what Dr. Mason was asking earlier, these practices can be used and kind of pulled on. Once you've experienced it, once you've sort of been exposed to it, they can be used at any point in your creative journey.
Let's talk a little bit about quantity versus quality. You know, when and I know you guys are friends with Jeremy. And Jeremy talks about, you know, how important it is to have a lot of ideas and picking those ideas and experimenting with them. Does this help you with both quantity and a whole lot of better ideas?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Marcus.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's our creative inspiration comes to us. In that particular case from Kendrick Lamar, Kendrick is the only hip hop artist who holds a Pulitzer Prize and also multiple Grammy Awards. So he's very accomplished in a very unique way. And the moment in his career that we tap into is right before one of his the album that he won was nominated seven Grammys and won two. This album is called To Pimp a Butterfly. And for this project, Kendrick wrote eight around 80 tracks to select down to the 16 that will go on to be this award-winning body of work. And so we talked through that to introduce the Creative Cliff Illusion, which is the byproduct of a study that was done for the Journal of Cognitive Sciences, reveals to us that most people believe that their creativity will drop over an extended period of time, when actually the research shows that it actually grows or increases. And so in the session that we do, we've come up with this really novel way of feeding prompts to get teams to go through the reps and sort of experience that breakthrough around about the eighth idea or the seventh idea when encouraged to think about nine. So absolutely, we're experiencing the whole quality, a quantity begets quality in the work that we're doing.
I thought that was fascinating. So 80 tracks, you write 80 songs and then hunts down to 16. I thought artists would just write one or two great songs and then like, all right, I got to fill out the rest of the album so that they come up with the other 14. So how typical is that for a musician to do that, write more and then whittle it down?
You know, at some depends on the scale of the artist. I guess it's actually probably more common than not. If you've been a recording artist for years, eventually you have to come to the quantity play, because you can't, you know, sort of sustain or have the type of body of work to pull from if you're only recording when it's time to go to that studio session that's booked for you. And it gets pretty expensive. You there's a lot of waste that happens. So over time, you know, you start to weed yourself out.
Jake, I have a good friend, Josh, who is a songwriter and one of my best friends in Nashville. He's been there for a long, long time, Rivers Rutherford, and has had a lot of hits, Rivers Rutherford. And he approaches writing songs like a job, Jake. I mean, he writes about 300 songs a year.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, he gets up and goes to the office. He's got a place downtown and he writes and, you know, and hoping to get one to hit. But I assume that you guys have worked with a lot of music people in the music industry. Is that one of y'all's target customers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So one of our aspirations with this work. So for myself, having the experience in leading marketing in the music industry, I've worked with a lot of musicians. And in this innovation work that we're doing at Stoke, absolutely, we want to bring this work to entertainment professionals, to musicians. One of our inspirations is Rick Rubin, and he's got this phenomenal book, The Creative Act, subtitled A Way of Being. And Rick, you know, he's the founder of Def Jam. He discovered groups like the Beastie Boys. I mean, he's just this really accomplished music exec. And he has been sort of tapping into these practices and ways of being and has sort of been a front runner in the music industry for these types of approaches. And, you know, Josh has also spent a lot of time digesting some Rick Rubin, especially last year.
Well, you know, I think it would be safe to say that there are some people who are more creative than other people, just naturally. That's the way they're wired. But, you know, there is every individual has some creativity in them. And, you know, I guess the big question is how to bring this out. And, you know, on this podcast, we talk a lot about continuous improvement. And it sounds like that this, your methods, you know, practiced over and over again, it's a skill that people can get better at, and they can become more creative. How do you measure that creativity? You know, if somebody says, am I becoming a more creative person, how would that be measured?
The first thing, the common trait that we see unlock creativity in maybe someone who's skeptical of themselves, they don't really believe, don't think of themselves as a creative person. The first step is practicing a behavior of play. If we can invite play into the mix, that sparks an openness to just try things that might feel a little different. We take a lot of inspiration from Bo Lotto, Dr. Bo Lotto, who is a neuroscientist out of the University of London. And he talks about play as being intrinsically motivating. It celebrates uncertainty. It encourages diversity, opens up possibility, and inspires cooperation. And so every time we dive into this way of working with teams that may be new to trying to tap into some of this unfettered brainstorming, we will guide teams through an intentional series of steps to practice playing together. One of those is an activity we call Oh Good, where Marcus, can I offer something to you, my friend?
Yes, please.
Marcus, what I have for you is this, the end of this pen cap here.
Oh, good. I can practice arranging some flowers I'd like to give to my wife. I just found out about these things called flower spiders at East Fork, and they sell them, and it helps you arrange flowers in this cool way. I can practice with that. How about I give you one? I just had this, there's about a third of liquid left in this Spindrift can that I just found on my desk, and I would like to give that to you.
Oh, good. I have the installers of our new sink just wrapped up finishing our sink install, so now I can test out the drain and make sure the pipes are working excellent. Thank you for the gift of fluid to discard.
I love it. That's awesome.
So that's just an example. Thanks for playing along with me, Marcus. That's an example of creating a scene to say, hey, we're going to practice giving imaginary gifts to one another. The only rule is to say, oh, good, and exclaim why this is the perfect gift for you. So instead of telling teams we're going to practice a yes and mindset, we're asking them to dive in, not take ourselves too seriously. And what that really does is extracts a lot of fear out of the room, a lot of pressure out of the room to come up with something bold and novel. And it invites us to say, if you can't think of an idea, share something obvious, the obvious thing that comes first, and helps us to encourage a spirit of acceptance that helps us get to the novel breakthrough concept.
That's really interesting. You talk about creativity and ideas in music, and I can see, in your friend HF, that's it's writing 300 songs a year, and then we have had several other people on here who've written books and or started companies, but I think the challenge often is going from the idea to enacting it and building it out. So I could come up with a million ideas a year and they could be fantastic. If I don't do anything with them, it just doesn't do any good. So how do you go, or what do you advise from the creativity process to actually put those ideas into action?
Yeah, there is, I think of a particularly novel idea that hit the whiteboard with a team we were working with. We were reimagining the first 6 weeks of motherhood after a mother gives birth. And the health insurance team we were working with had realized what they thought was support was actually just a self-serving business interest, and they needed to reimagine what supporting these new moms really looked like. Someone was brave enough to put a post-it note of an umbrella that said Mary Poppins postpartum doula question mark. Where what I admire is the bravery of one person to put up something that's playful, a little wacky, but I also admire the openness of the team to consider it. They very well could have said, that's cute, let's get to some real ideas. But by considering it, it opened up the door to a 24/7 network that connects me to someone in my network for my mom need of the moment is what we identified. And the example could be a lactation consultant at 3 a.m. when a mother is really needing support in the moment. The team, what I think first, the superpower is considering something that may seem wacky, The next thing the team did is asked, what is the quickest way we can run an experiment to understand if we're headed in the right direction? And that means a conversation with a new mother. Mm-hmm. So that looks like the team engaging, who are moms in our network that we know have had a child within the last 6 months? Let's take these, you know, two or three ideas we're excited about and actually put them in front of them in a way that's believable, to understand if we're headed in the right direction. They got enough cues to know we're onto something here. What I also admire is the way that they used some existing infrastructure to test this model out with new moms. They offered this service to employees first to say, hey, we're interested. There's something here. Let's see if we get a decent take rate with offering a short pilot to our employees, and stood something up within a month to be able to offer this service. And they're not measuring if people say they like the idea. They're measuring if people actually engage with this offering that's made available to them. So our challenge to ourselves and to other creators is, how can you run an experiment that allows you to measure behaviors and not just what people say they would do? And that could be spinning up an experiment inside your organization and offering it to employees, or creating something to see, did people follow through on what they said they would do by signing up for a service or something like this? So that experiment to get to behavior-based measurements is so valuable.
Josh, sometimes I think of one of the barriers or obstacles toward innovation is actually people's misunderstanding of what innovation is and what it means. Because a lot of people think that, oh, if I'm innovative, that means I have to, you know, I have to develop the new cell phone or the new computer. But really, innovation is just the introduction of something new. And, you know, for our frontline worker, it may be a new way. It may not be radically different, but it's a different way of doing your job. And it may just be a small change. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Or am I correct in saying that sometimes, yeah, sometimes that's a barrier?
Yeah. The example that comes to mind is a tendency we have to over-index on expertise.
Yes.
One okay. example we draw from, if we go back to the idea science recipe, starting with a creative act in music, the Talking Heads. Are you familiar with the band from
sure.
the 80s?
Sure. Burning Down the House.
Yeah, there you go. So there's a song called This Must Be the Place that was, I think, Pitchfork identified it in the top 200 songs of the 80s. And the way they actually wrote this song is by switching instruments. Everyone in the band, if I'm a drummer, I'm now holding a bass guitar. I don't play bass guitar, but I'm going to see what comes out. The synthesizer player has a guitar around their neck. And they were willing to temporarily abandon expertise to see what novel territory can we find. One of the insights that come from that, we would call creative forecasting. And that is, how well are we equipped at predicting the future success of this new outcome? And what we find is, if we over-index on expertise, we tend to overvalue ideas that are familiar and undervalue ideas that might feel more novel. And so in this very early, delicate stage of introducing something new, you're exactly right, Dr. Mason, innovation doesn't have to be the bright, shiny new iPhone. It's just bringing something new to bear in our existing environment. Inviting folks that may be one degree of separation removed from that concept, inviting them to play a significant role in voicing an opinion on what a next step could look like. That's so disarming, and also actually increases our likelihood of success by going one degree of separation from those who might be the resident experts. that requires maybe shaking up a little bit of our tendencies or what our go-to moves are and being willing to push pause.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. You know, having innovation not necessarily come from the experts of the area. Sometimes it would come from someone that, you know, that's more of a generalist or didn't know the field as much, which is interesting. Healthcare is so regulated and so complex that it's difficult to innovate within the bounds of the existing structures. And so, but it needs it badly. I don't know if you have any comments or thoughts on that.
Yeah, talking to our customers or talking to the folks that we are ultimately trying to serve is probably one of the ways that works in most, if not all, contexts. Particularly, we've seen, we were actually just talking about that this morning, sort of in this, Josh had spun out this quote for us from a colleague of ours that aims at this mindset of, instead of designing for or innovating for, we can make a shift to designing or innovating with, and that being the people that we are ultimately trying to serve. So in a healthcare context, it could be, well, who is someone who has experienced, maybe going through, has experience with an MRI machine or has experience with a particular operation and using their pain points and their experiences to sort of guide how we, what we prioritize and where we might explore.
Well, guys, this has been really, really great. I'm going to jump in and throw it, see if I can wedge in one more comment. I listened quite consistently to Jeremy's podcast, Paint and Pipette. I think I got that correct. And just fantastic podcast. Really recommend it highly. And he made something, he made a statement the other day where he said that so often when it comes to generating ideas, we label the ideas as good or bad. When in reality, we just need to produce lots of ideas and then experiment with those ideas. And through the experimentation process, we'll ultimately determine what is good or bad. I may have butchered that. So Marcus or Josh, jump in and see if I framed that correctly.
Yeah. Well, first, we got to give Jeremy his flowers. I mean, Josh and I both we stand on the shoulders of giants when it comes to Jeremy and others like him, but specifically Jeremy. And, you know, in the oh good exercise that Josh and I did, we actually borrow from Jeremy when he says that we want to make a mindset shift in order to pursue quality to get to quantity. We want to make a mindset shift from what do I think of this idea to what does this idea make me think of. Now, I didn't know that Josh was going to show me that pin top, right? But it made me think of this flower spider that I saw at a store, and it instantly has value and we can get somewhere new. So that mindset shift has been super, super helpful for us. And Josh, you got anything to add to that?
Yeah, there's language we use internally, and that is labeling if we're in a focus mode or a flare mode. This generative space of coming up with ideas and new directions we'd call a flare mode. And it only works well when we all agree that we're in a flare mode. There's nothing quite as demoralizing of one person flaring and another person trying to focus on decisions. Conversely, when it gets to running experiments and making decisions, we need to align as a group, whoever's in the room or on the call or working in the moment, to say, is this a focus mode? Because if so, let's start looking at the data we have from our experiment to make intentional decisions on what we do next. Simply using language to align as a team has such a positive impact on a team culture, but also the productivity of the team on knowing when we're exploring or when we're making decisions and moving forward.
Well, Josh and Marcus, thank you so much for joining us today. We're just so thankful for y'all and the really important work you're doing. I just really enjoy spending time with y'all. And so on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, thank y'all so much. And hopefully you'll come back on the future and share us more great work you're doing. But thank y'all so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Dr. Mason, Dr. Lang.